Welcome to the Telehealth and Medicine Today Journal podcast series presenting the state of telehealth and digital health trends for 2025. Today, our guests are Dr. Lyle Berkowitz, CEO of KeyCare, and Dr. Cheyenne Vias, Executive Vice President, Hippocratic AI. Let's listen in on what clinicians can plan for and contribute to this year.
We are going to have a really interesting podcast today in telehealth. I am Lyle Berkowitz. I'm a physician, primary care doctor. I've been involved in digital health for many years. I'm CEO of KeyCare, a national telehealth company working on Epic. And I have with me a friend and partner, Cheyenne Vias. Both of us are involved with this great online magazine, Telehealth and Medicine Today, where we publish a lot of interesting research on telehealth and related topics. Cheyenne, give us your quick origin story.
Thank you. Good morning. Good afternoon. I hope everyone's doing well. Super excited to kick off this podcast with Lyle, who's an expert. I'm a pediatric critical care physician by background, practice telehealth for over what's scary is over two decades now. I'm over at Hippocratic AI and excited to talk to you, but Lyle, about what's happening in telehealth, and encourage our listeners to be involved, get published, and help spread the word.
Okay, so let's dive in. Telehealth, virtual care, there are a bunch of definitions, etc. But what I think people really want to know about is, what is going on? What are some hot topics? We've come up with a couple to talk about. I think one of the hottest topics, of course, in healthcare in general, and at every conference I go to, is AI. That ranges from GPT to ambient AI to agentic agents, etc. Cheyenne, you have landed in the middle of that at your new role. Let's talk about AI-powered virtual care. What the heck does that mean? And what do we think it's going to look like in the next year, two, three down the road? I have a couple of thoughts and a couple of questions on this. So tell us what it means from your perspective. You're at an AI type company, which is helping healthcare systems, et cetera. Yeah. How do you guys even think about telehealth? They have someone like you who's a telehealth expert. So I'm curious what you're thinking.
Yeah. Well, let's put it in the perspective of the end user, right? End user is patient and physician or clinician. We think about AI in terms of just making life easier, right? I'm waving the keyboard up in if you can see me on video, which you can't, we got to get rid of the keyboard, essentially, from physicians and clinicians. And so I think phase one of kind of AI in healthcare, either it be bricks and mortar or virtual care, is essentially removing some of the keyboard requirements for our clinicians. So I think you're seeing that pretty widespread throughout the industry, especially here domestically in the United States, is you're seeing this automation of dictation, right? And these companies are doing some really cool jobs, kind of creating and dictating the chart in a SOAP fashion. So it's pretty user friendly in terms of the turnaround and where the data gets submitted. I've seen a number of companies, we're not going to endorse any of them, but essentially, being able to capture both users' voice and creating a very nice, elegant progress note like Lyle and I would type up. I'd probably argue it does a better job than both of us in terms of kind of making sure all the data is captured. And that's exactly what phase one, I think, is.
So we're referring to ambient AI. Tons of companies in this area right now. I think at least 42 official companies, or probably 100 or something. At one point, it felt like every company out there threw that in there. And I think that the truth is, there's not even a question as to whether this is great anymore. It's amazing And I was shocked for someone who's been rolling out technology to doctors for many years and gained a lot of pushback. There's very few things like this I've seen that's so well accepted. And there's lots of legs for it to grow on. The biggest question, I think, is this just a commodity in a race to the bottom on pricing? Right. And you talk to those companies, of course, they say, well, no, we're all going to differentiate and we're all going to hold still on our pricing. On the other hand, we've seen prices come down 10x from the beginning. Within a year, I've never seen anything so quickly commoditized. And the majority of what a lot of these do are pretty, the pretty basic, and they're adding on really cool new stuff. But curious your thoughts, how AI tech feels. In many ways, it's amazing, but it's almost so easy. Can anyone just do it? How are people going to differentiate themselves in a variety of ways when these things? Yeah, I've got high school students calling me saying they've created these type of similar technologies.
Well, you remember, 15 years ago, we would take in the telehealth space almost a whole year before we actually announced a new feature. You in your previous role, I remember bumping into you on the conference floor, and you were about to announce something, and we had to wait essentially a whole year before a new feature in telemedicine came out. And now, fast forward to today, where it's almost every week there's a new feature that one of these big tech companies is rolling out in terms of their automation and their AI capabilities. So I completely agree with you. I think that you're starting to see some of these AI companies, automation, help with patient triage, help with symptom checkers, post follow-up visits. I do agree with you that it seems like this is going to become a commodity. To your point, high school students can create this. The building blocks to building some of these features are getting easier out of the box. I like to say the Lego blocks are just getting much bigger for entrepreneurs and startups to take off the shelf big tech products and customize them into their into healthcare or into their swim lane. And so I think, what I'm starting to see now is automated responses to portals, right? The ability for a patient to send a message through a portal, and then there's all of a sudden an AI component there that is creating the best potential response, right? To help the clinician kind of auto reply, if you will, or co-pilot reply to all these portal messages coming in. So I think that's probably the next step. We're obviously seeing decision support being widespread, being able to do radiology diagnostics faster, arguably more efficient, perhaps. And then, on the back end, right, administrative side, you're seeing AI help reduce scheduling, help reduce kind of the billing, and as we talked about, the documentation burden. So that rev cycle, there's a lot of automation happening there as well. But for our audience, I think the rev cycle and the back end office is probably a little bit of a boring conversation. But focusing on our clinicians, I'm super excited about where AI is going when it comes to essentially helping clinicians bubble up, HEDIS measures or key follow-ups that perhaps, that are not obvious to a clinician when they're seeing a patient virtually or in person.
I'm gonna let's talk about two buckets, right? And let's talk a little more about how it helps virtualists. Bucket number one is how do you automate some of the super simple stuff ahead of time or afterwards. And bucket number two is how do you surface the early warning detection for stuff that you might not notice very much. So the first bucket is gonna be, virtual care is interesting, right? Because your patient by default, is going to be online. It could be phone-based, but a lot of times, these days it's video-based because that's how you can get compensated under insurance more easily. One of the things certainly we're and others are looking at are, hey, how can we capture some of the information ahead of time using some type of agentic agent, to capture the history in a way that feels comfortable and doesn't feel duplicative, right? We got handed over to the doctor so they don't have to repeat everything. And Second, is how do we use AI to maybe find subtle stuff, either in the past medical history or maybe via video or audio analysis, for little things, right? That could be anything from checking the blood pressure, the vitals, and oxygen level, to looking for swelling of the sinuses or something subtle that the human eye might not detect, but AI can detect. So in bucket number one, you've done telehealth for a long time. How would you feel if your agent did sort of the prep work with the patient and sort of came to you like a resident clinic and said, "Hey, Dr. B, what's here is I've done the work. Here's what's going on with this patient." How comfortable are you saying, "Okay, I agree with your analysis that this patient has a sinus infection or has something more serious, and I agree with your analysis. I don't even have to ask the patient anything," versus, "Well, I need to repeat everything with the patient." Like, where's your comfort level on that, being an experienced virtual care doctor?
I think here's something that you have to take into account: the supply and demand, right? Clinicians, there's not an endless amount of physicians, as you know. The health systems, the payers, they can't continue to grow physicians or clinicians perhaps 20 years ago. There's a limited supply. I can go into that in a different conversation, but essentially, there's not. And now we're at this intersection where there's actually an exponential, I'd argue even an unlimited access to these agentic agents. And so as this technology evolves, I think it's a question of where consumers, where these users get their adoption. Some folks will adopt faster than others. I'm very comfortable with it, right? I think the reality is that we all, ten years ago, we needed a scribe walking around following us to help us capture all the data. I think the reality now is that how do we get patients and the right data in front of us faster, better, more efficient? And efficiency is a big deal. Cost savings is a big deal. So obviously, I'm a big fan of using AI agents to capture data to help patients. I think the technology's come a long way, and it's going to continue to start to develop logic, meaning
Okay,
that.
I'm going to push you. We're agreeing that it makes sense. It's going to improve efficiency. A lot of what you guys are doing on are not clinical per se. It's education. I'm talking pure on clinical. How much right now, and maybe in a year or two, do you trust that agent to have captured the information that you need so your visit doesn't have to be 10 minutes? It can be, it can be, "Hey, patient, my AI assistant reviewed everything, and I feel comfortable saying
Yeah,
that you
I think that,
have this, and we're just going to go ahead and treat you."
well, listen, I think we're not at the point where we can allow the AI agents to take off and to do their own thing, right? They need to be the data needs to be collected and then critically thought through by a clinician. So I think number one, I think we're in a stage where AI agents can absolutely collect data. They can collect the right data. And then, I think it's important that they hand it over to a human to do the critical thinking today. That's where I think we're at.
And I'm gonna throw out, I think the way I'd feel comfortable is if it didn't just tell me, "Hey, yeah, they I believe they have a sinus infection, right? But this is why. They meet the criteria A, B, C. I believe they've got, pityriasis rosea, because I can visually see this the way they describe it." Yeah, the more that they can surface up the history and that we can sort of maybe quickly confirm with the patient, I feel like that's how it's gonna work. It'll be, and I think, like I said, I use the analogy of what we used to call residency clinic, whereas an attending doctor would sit in a room, six residents would come, explain, we would trust them, we would ask them questions. Now and then we go and talk to the patient ourselves, but we could 6x ourselves very quickly with that type of analogy. So let's jump to the next question. Things like really cool stuff, early detection, vital signs using AI. Isn't was a little hotter a year ago. It's been hard to get FDA approval per se, but my gosh, I've seen these things not only get blood pressure and pulse, but oxygen level, even glucose levels. I barely understand that. Do you have any experience in that? What do you think of that and or other really cool analysis of AI to listen to the audio, right? Detect depression. Those things have been around for a while. Maybe detect what type of cough you have. What are your thoughts on those things?
Great question, Dr. Law. I think, I'm gonna tip my hat to my former colleagues at InTouch. We had, they had created that ability years ago to take a look at a patient through the camera and start to create vital signs. It didn't come to fruition. It was a really cool project that we had internally. But to your point, we're starting to see that now. I've seen the ability for AI to detect depression in a voice. I think that that's definitely here. The adoption curve is slower than I would have liked. But yeah, and some, I think, folks are skittish, right? Because they want the FDA approval. But I'm super excited. There's one vendor in particular, that I met with on the showroom at one of these conferences, and they showed me the product, and the voice analysis behind some mental illness was awesome. And I think to your point, and maybe your question is, these tools can subtly help physicians and clinicians practice a little better, right? If I'm doing a virtual visit and the AI just alerts me that there's maybe some signs of depression, I can go into screening, right? Whereas I normally wouldn't, and I'd be treating sinusitis. I'll treat the sinusitis now, but now with these tools, maybe I'll dive in a little deeper, into, their mental health. I think these are really cool tools. Not quite ready for mainstream adoption yet. I'm a little puzzled why. Is it the FDA issue? Is it reimbursement? Is it cost? But as you see things come down, I'm hopeful. I'm excited. I think, when you think about virtual nursing and inpatient virtual care, these bring, I think this just amplifies the ability for virtualists
Yeah,
to
we've
expand their
seen
practice.
probably the hottest thing has been virtual nursing, virtual sitting, et cetera, and AI being used to amplify that. So instead of seeing five or six patients, you can see 10 or 20, et cetera, which makes sense. Again, early detection. I did research on this years ago with the Xbox. I guess I should have started a company around that, of being able to watch a patient in a room and because I'm as a doctor, right? I mean, it's amazing how much time we let a very sick person sit alone in a room and no one is watching them. This allows for 24 by 7 watching of the patient, which is great. Okay, let's talk about there are so many different topics in healthcare and telehealth, but as we talk about these things, recognize what, man, they need a lot of research, right? We're sitting here talking about, well, can we trust the AI for this? Can it do this? This is why research is so important in publishing research, et cetera. What do you think are some of the hot topics you've seen in research papers in the past year? And what do you think people should be doing research? And how do we get the, places who don't normally do research, companies, to maybe publish some more research? We so often have been relying on academic medical centers where there is huge lag time. You need to get, big budgets to do it, et cetera. But we need some real from the ground research. So I'm asking one, what do you think are the hot topics in the past year and should be hot topics in the next year? And two, how do we get the regular community to start publishing research?
So on that last question, right, we are open to submissions right now, right? So if you're listening and you have a potential submission, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to get you enrolled in our journal. And so I think, that's number one. I want to make sure that our audience knows that we are
Telehealth and
open.
Medicine Today, leading online journal in telehealth and related. We are taking submissions. Go to telehealthandmedicinetoday.com, hit on submission, and you don't have to be a PhD level researcher, but you need to know how to write a regular research paper these days, and Those things are getting, it's getting easier to do. Does not have to be a huge, huge research study. It can be a smaller one if it has something interesting and differentiating.
Yep. And so to your first question, the deeper one on terms of research, I think, you're obviously seeing AI reduce the healthcare staff workload, right? With this automation, with dictation and ambient listening. So you're seeing a lot of research there. There's clearly an ROI there in terms of the hours saved that we spend typing away, right? So you're going to continue to see that. There's a vast number of clinicians now in the United States that are using these tools. So there's a ton of data. I think, taking a step further, you're looking at, some of these automated tasks like films, right? I think right at the radiology suite, you're starting to see AI start to kind of hone in on trouble spots or maybe normal images. There's a shortage of radiologists, and that's going to continue. There's more films being done every day and then in the past 10 years combined, right? And so we're taking a lot more films, and there's less radiologists out there. And so we need to help these radiologists. The demand far exceeds the supply of clinicians being able to do that. So I think you're going to continue over the next year or two to see research done in AI around radiology. Now, thinking about where care is being delivered, there's more and more care being delivered in the home. Wearables have continued to proliferate. I have a really awesome wearable ring right now that's telling me all about my sleep and my status. In fact, right before I get sick and I feel symptoms, it's starting to alert me. And so I think, you think about where the patients are at, the majority, vast majority of patients will continue to be at home. And that's really where virtual care is going to come in. And so being able to tie those wearables, the RPMs, the patches that are coming out with a virtualist, that's really, I think, where we need to go in the next 2 or 3 years. Delivering care at home virtually is something that's going to continue to, I think, really be a hot button, especially as we see what's happening in Congress and with Medicaid, Medicare reimbursement going down.
Yeah, great. I think it's a, yeah, I'm looking, yeah, the past year, I think we've seen, a variety of interest in international papers in telehealth. We're, starting to see, a little in tech, but mostly it's about access and effectiveness of telehealth. There are two recent research papers that I know are being published in some journals that are talking about, and this is super important. Does telehealth save money? And both of these papers came out specifically around Medicare and in the Medicare population that telehealth either is, cost neutral or saving money. And that's really important as we get to these telehealth extensions and ideally permanency. I think we'll see the ability to quote some research, right? Because the government's looking for ways to save money. And if it turns out telehealth conclusively is saving money for Medicare patients, it's a lot easier for everyone to pass it because now it's not only the right thing to do, but is the economically and financially viable thing to do. And that type of research is super important right now. The other research that I'm looking for in the next year certainly going to be how is AI doing with respect to telehealth and specifically, right? What can it do? As I said, in those two buckets, can it capture independently a really good clinical history to make the doctor more efficient and more effective? And can it identify interesting things that might not easily be done otherwise? It might not be easy to the human eye, whether it's a vital signs or movement or audio, or it is a deep dive into the patient's past medical history. One of the favorite things we have, what my doctors like is because we have Epic, we have access to a lot more past history. And that turns out to be, even in an urgent care setting, more important than I think a lot of people realize. Patients often have really important past histories. In some cases, it's just their history of a routine issue. In other cases, it's the fact that they have, a history of blood clots, were in the ER a week ago, et cetera. and have some interesting things that may affect what's going on with questions that they have, even in urgent care. Sometimes are more complex. And the more that we have ability to look at and analyze past history, the better. So research on how that is affecting quality, I think, is going to be important. So I think quality and economics are the things to look at. How are those being impacted? We know what telehealth improves access. That now is a much easier thing to look at and say.
Yeah, I think when, your point about being able to really look deeper into the patient, even if it's an acute care visit, is important, right? For the audience that may have not practiced medicine, Lau, I don't know if you agree with this, but about 90% of my ability to make a diagnosis is based on history. Very rarely do I need to pull off my stethoscope and listen to a chest. Pediatrics, elderly, adults, I think it's all the same, right? Some research has says somewhere closer to 70 to 90% of history kind of helps with making a diagnosis. And to your point, the history is not only what we obtain and ask from maybe the patient or something that's curated by an AI agent like we spoke about earlier, but it's also the chart, right? Being able to go into the chart and take a look at what happened a few years ago. Quick glance at the labs, just to see where they're at, right? Is that hemoglobin A1C creeping up? And, are those, is that infection just an infection, or is there really time to really think about something systemic that's happening? And so I think, my point is that when it comes to telehealth and fragmentation, I think it really changes the cost savings, right? It really disrupts the energy around trying to holistically take care of a patient and understand them. I think it's great if you want to get a GLP-1 and you're a little bit overweight and you want to pay cash and just you're not worried about someone diving deep in your history. But looking at kind of overall medicine, the history is the most important thing. Being able to dive deeper into the chart or ask better questions, very important. And so when you think about these cost savings that you just mentioned with Medicaid and Medicare, that's not taking into account the fragmentation that may be occurring. That's taking into account being able to really dive deep into patients' history.
Is it Sir William Osler, like one of the giants in healthcare, said, if you listen to patients carefully enough, they will tell you the diagnosis. It's something we've learned over the years, and particularly in the health, telehealth trade, that's exactly what we get, and it does work. Particularly if you're experienced and there's some muscle memory, but it'll be fun to have AI helping us along the way. So I'm going to finish with a quick question outside of telehealth, Cheyenne. I love asking this question. Is what's your favorite AI GPT tool? What are you using these days that is making your life easier in some ways and just in and out of life? Share with us if there's any interesting apps or websites that you love and or how you're using GPT in general. Maybe, if you don't want to name a specific app.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of just cleaning up my emails. I'm super busy. I got two active kids at home, and I try to play a chef at home as well. So juggling a lot of things, working at a very fast, nimble startup company that obviously is using generative AI. I'm using the GPTs, if you will, really to kind of help me be more productive and formal in my emails. That's really where I'm using it every single day. My kids are off today. I made crepes from scratch. I used GPT to give me the whole recipe, and it turned out wonderful. So we're using this every day, GPT. I'm taking a trip soon to Europe. I've asked it to kind of plan my whole itinerary, right? So instead of spending hours Googling stuff, I've eliminated it down to some prompts, right? And so my everyday life is the answer. I'm using it professionally to clean up some of my emails, help me kind of guide, reflect, right? And using it as a kind of a executive coach. I have two options here. What should I do? And like I said, I think this is becoming baked into my daily life from its either being a father or a husband. or trying to be an executive, I'm using it every single day. I think it's super efficient. If I have to name drop, I love ChatGPT. We use the latest version, so we're paying for that, and it's super great. But I try them all. I'm not tipping my hat either way. I'll use the tools in front of me because, look, my brain. I think I'm a pretty intelligent guy, but these large language models that are baked behind it, there's no way that I could have this comprehension or this compounding exponential math going on in my brain. And so it's a no-brainer for me.
I mean, it's how quickly before we get to a point where we're like, how did we live without this? How did we communicate? What type of ruffians were we? So it is fun
It
to
is.
see it improving. And I do like that. That's funny you bring it up. I also my daughter will sometimes come home and she's out of college now, but she drops by and I always ask what she wants for dinner and whatever she wants. I'm like, I throw it in GPT. I'm like, okay, I can make that, honey, and I'll go to the store, pick up a couple things, and surprise her. And she's already has a couple favorites from me. And so, what a great fun way to end this.
I hope she's not a listener.
She's unfortunately probably not. Although she's in healthcare now. She's actually working in a physician office. So hopefully the kids are using GPT smarter than we will, right?
Yeah.
But
So, well, let me ask you one more question then, my
yeah.
last question. So if you were to able if your daughter was listening, which I hope she is, and if there's medical students and aspiring physicians and nurses listening, what would be your advice today, Dr. Lyle? The technology's come a long way. Where would you say students, researchers should start thinking about? What would be your advice?
I think that the classic advice we're hearing and applied to every industry, including healthcare, is physicians, healthcare providers, et cetera, won't be replaced by AI, but they will be replaced by someone, physicians, et cetera, who are using AI. So back in 1995, I loved computers, technology, was an early adopter. My fellow doctors looked at me sort of strange. Why are you doing that? Why, you're a doctor, you don't need computers. Be an early adopter. Stay on top of this stuff. Know how to use this stuff because you'll be that much more powerful and effective in what you're doing. And a lot of times, it is simply using it in the very basic ways for your life, and then thinking about how does that cross-pollinate into healthcare. These days, there's a lot of free healthcare tools. My gosh, Doximity, super great tool that any doctor can use, and has a lot of GPT tools built in to help things go a little more easily, so you don't have to necessarily feel guilty about putting in something that might feel like patient information. But stay on top of this stuff, use this stuff in your personal life, and start thinking, how might this apply into my professional life? I'll always be ahead of the curve, and it's going to make your life better, easier, faster.
Yep, awesome. So we're excited to kick this podcast off. We're going to have some super exciting guests join us, dive a little deeper into some topics that that maybe we're not focused on, maybe that you're interested in hearing. So we're super excited. We have a number of guests lined up coming up, and I want to encourage everyone to continue supporting our journal. We do want to hear from you. We want to hear some early publications, some early thought ideas that you have. Together, we need to move the industry forward. And with your research and your editorials, we're super excited to consider it for publication.
And I think, again, I'll emphasize, really important that the non-traditional folks, the docs in the trenches, vendors, et cetera, you have a lot of interesting data. You say that it's doing well, let's share it, let's publish it, let's get it out there. Does not to be need to be large, randomized, decentralized, multi-center trials. As long as it has something interesting, even if it's a small number of folks, but is showing something interesting. Let's get it out there.
We appreciate your tuning in to the Telehealth and Medicine Today podcast series. Do you want to learn more or have a comment? Do you have a novel topic or solution to share with our audience? If so, send an email to info@partnersindigitalhealth.com or visit the open access peer reviewed journal, Telehealth and Medicine Today, and stay up to date with exciting articles that bridge research with real world frontline impact. Thanks for listening.